All right. Good day, everybody. And here for this episode of Blood Club, where we talk about Blood Club. We're supposed to talk about Blood Club, and we're going to talk about an ongoing series on follicular lymphoma. And I'm joined here today by my colleague, Dr. Karen Jacobson from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Massachusetts. Thank you, Karen, for joining us today.
Well, thanks so much for inviting me.
Yeah, so I want to dive right in and talk about follicular lymphoma. We've been having some discussions on earlier episodes about frontline management of follicular lymphoma and really trying to understand when to treat follicular lymphoma patients. And it kind of diving into that whole 80-20 prophecy, you know, around whether or not there are 80% are going to do good and then the 20% who are going to do bad. But I don't know that that's truly the real percentages. But I want to switch gears and talk about, you know, when follicular lymphoma goes bad, you know, or goes wild, and that patient population, and truly kind of how you're figuring out if a follicular lymphoma has gone bad. You know, I've been in those situations where you're throwing darts into lymph nodes and you just keep getting follicular lymphoma back, but you know, that this isn't behaving normally. So in your practice, kind of what are some of the clinical pearls that you have around, you know, your management and your thoughts on follicular lymphoma?
I think that for the majority of patients, it's absolutely true that they will do very, very well in their life and they'll die with follicular lymphoma and not of follicular lymphoma. And so in those patients, it's incredibly important to prioritize safety and tolerability and quality of life, you know, slightly over efficacy of therapies. And there really has to be a reason to treat the follicular lymphoma at any point in those patients' course so that, you know, the risk imposed by that treatment, you know, is warranted. But then there are a group of patients that do poorly, and some of them you can predict ahead of time based on their FLIPI score. Others you can predict after their frontline treatment because they relapse early. Either they don't go into remission with frontline treatment or they relapse within the first 2 years after treatment. And then I would add another group of patients to that mix, and I would add any patient who requires third-line therapy because we know progression-free survival historically for patients who need third-line therapy is on average just about a year, year and a half, you know, with our historical therapies. And I don't mean the patient that gets Rituxan two times and then needs chemo immunotherapy. I mean the patient who gets real treatment, like, you know, the combination therapy for first and second line, and then they're needing a third-line therapy. So I think those are sort of the three groups of patients I worry about from the beginning, and then I'm thinking about treating more aggressively. And I guess I would add one other group of patients to this mix, and those are the patients who are diagnosed, you know, in their 40s and 50s, not the patients that are diagnosed in their 60s and 70s, because even if we could string along, you know, the best case scenario with the best three or four therapies, you know, having those patients survive 20 to 30 years doesn't offer the same prognosis as someone who's 60 or 70, where, you know, maybe their natural lifespan is not going to be affected.
Yeah, I think you make very good points there about, you know, when we go in and we read journal articles about follicular lymphoma, one of the things that's always bothered me, you know, is looking through the eligibility criteria and trying to pick apart, you know, what was the true population that was represented in the clinical trials to help understand if this was kind of your follicular lymphoma that didn't need a treatment, but probably couldn't have, but there was a clinical trial available. And then there's the follicular lymphoma population within those, a lot of those trials, probably a minority of them, that you just described, and how to truly pick apart, you know, that table. You alluded to some of them, but I think, you know, Pod 24 has kind of gotten watered down slightly. You know, if you start to look in the methodology, it really doesn't reflect, you know, the original Casulo paper population. But also, what are some other of those, you know, beyond Pod 24, some of those characteristics that would make you say, okay, this is a subset or follicular lymphoma population that to pay attention to?
Yeah, so I think patients with high FLIPI scores, I think patients with evidence of circulating disease and extranodal involvement, and I think also number of lines of therapy, where you define the number of lines of therapy maybe not by, you know, single agent monoclonal antibody therapy, but by combination approaches.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point, because we have seen, you know, looking at the resort data, you know, yes, there's a law of diminishing returns with subsequent rituximab dosing, but how do you count that, right? It's like, is that four lines of therapy or is that one line of therapy? It probably matters regardless if you count it second or fourth line. But I hear you, and I want to kind of transition now to the discussion about that third line patient. You know, so you know that they are getting there and they need therapy. And I think that that's a discussion for a different day on kind of in that relapse setting, when do you, you know, start another patient? And I think all the caveats that we've talked about with frontline therapy have caveats for starting in a relapse setting. You've been very involved in, you know, cellular therapy and raising that up in relapse refractory follicular lymphoma. So how are you kind of right now, you know, understanding that CAR T-cell is available both with T-cell and with axi-cell in the follicular lymphoma space, understanding that liso-cel just put out some data, where's your brain right now and what's the opportune time to go to CAR T-cell?
What's really attractive about CAR T-cells in the third line and beyond is their durability of response. So I think, you know, clearly we don't have long enough follow-up data from any of these studies yet to understand if there's a proportion of patients that may never have their follicular lymphoma come back. Although I think there's some reason to be optimistic because there are patients that were treated in 2010 on the, you know, first in human studies of CD19 CARs who had follicular lymphoma and have had 10 plus year remissions at this point. But the bottom line is with 3-year follow-up on these studies at most, we really haven't seen long enough data to understand if a proportion of patients are going to be cured. That being said, I think, you know, right now on with axi-cel from the ZUMA-5 study, we're seeing that the median progression-free survival with each reporting gets pushed out and pushed out. I think it was at 40 months at the last reporting. The 3-year follow-up was just published in Blood this week. And it's closer to 50 months at this point. So, I mean, that's a significant improvement over PI3 kinase inhibitors, for example, and even looks significantly improved over the newest kid on the block that was approved in third line follicular lymphoma, the CD20 bispecific antibodies. And so I think the pause here, of course, is that CAR T-cells are expensive. They are logistically challenging to get patients to. Although I would argue a little bit less logistically challenging with follicular lymphoma, because even in bad cases, you generally have more time to wait for manufacturing and insurance approval. And the brain-to-vein time matters a little bit less, I think, in this disease. And then also that they have toxicities. And as I said at the outset of this discussion, you know, I think even in bad cases of follicular lymphoma, you're still having to think about whether the toxicities and the risk of the toxicities is advisable given the natural history of the disease. And so with axi-cel, the toxicities, namely CRS and neurologic toxicity, are improved compared to the aggressive lymphomas. But, you know, it's still a 6% risk of grade 3 or higher CRS and a 15% risk of grade 3 or higher neurologic toxicity. And so that is something that you really have to take into account, especially when now we have the bispecifics where, while the progression-free survival is not as long as with CAR T-cells, it's still longer than it was with, you know, previously available therapies. I think some of that discussion becomes a little bit more muted and a little bit less impactful when we think about Tisagen, Leclusal, and Lisocabtagene, Marilucil, and follicular lymphoma. So they both look very highly active. You know, I think we still see like maybe a slightly lower CR rate with Tisagen, Leclusal, and maybe a slightly shorter PFS and with Tisagen, Leclusal than we do with axi-cel or liso-cel. But we're seeing almost no grade 3 CRS and almost no grade 3 neurologic toxicity. The toxicity actually looks very similar to CD20 bispecifics. Then, you know, all of a sudden, it's not a more toxic therapy. It is a one-time therapy as opposed to, you know, therapy that goes over 6 to 8 months and requires, you know, multiple visits into the cancer center. And, you know, to be honest, the first month of bispecifics is not all that less complicated and more trivial than the month that it takes to get patients through CAR T-cells. So, you know, I think this is a really attractive therapy for patients with follicular lymphoma who are up for it, you know, who have the family situation and the home life that can allow them to either move to a city to get CAR T cells or even or live close enough that they can stay at home, who are willing to accept the small risk and who really value the time off of therapy. The way I look at it is I think this really does come down to a discussion with the patients. And I've had discussions with other providers who say, like, you know, it's not our job to sort of present something and let patients choose. We should be guiding them in some way. But I really see pros and cons to both of these. And I'm not suggesting that I just say, like, here are the pros to CAR T-cells and the cons, and here are the pros and cons to bispecifics. You know your patient. You've taken care of them, especially with follicular lymphoma at that point. You've taken care of them for a number of years. You know what they value. And you can use that information to, you know, present them with both options, but to present it in a way that takes into account what would be important to them and steer them in one direction. But I don't think it's as simple as saying CAR T cells are too logistically challenging and too toxic and that we should take them off the table.
When you think about CAR T cells, and let's say AxiCell, let's just use that one as an example because it's approved in both areas. Timing of response in large cell lymphoma compared to follicular lymphoma, do you see any different cadence of response where, you know, if you're in a CR at 3 months or 6 months of large cell versus, you know, a PR at 3 months and 6 months with follicular, are you losing hope or you're concerned about the durability like you would be in large cell versus follicular?
In large cell, there's been a lot of data and a lot of landmark analysis to say, you know, if you're in CR at 3 months, that means you have a this percentage chance of staying in CR. If you're at 6 months, at 12 months. And, you know, there's a point where you can say your risk of relapse is very, very small. And I don't think we can say that for any sort of point in follicular lymphoma. My sweet spot for follicular lymphoma is actually 12 months. So I think anyone who's in CR for the first 12 months, that could still be from the fludarabine and cyclophosphamide. So even though these patients have been multiply pretreated, fludarabine is a drug we often underlook as a good treatment for follicular lymphoma. And I think even, you know, 3 days of fludarabine could potentially put someone in remission for a year. But I think if they stay in remission beyond a year, then in my experience, that predicts for multi-year remissions and that those patients probably have an immune response from the CAR T cells as well. In the blood paper that just came out this week, a really interesting finding was that they looked at disease-specific progression-free survival, so not other events, right? Because these are an older patient population where they have other medical comorbidities. And between 2.5 and 4 years, there was not one single disease-specific progression event. And that's very significant to me. So while the PFS curve continues to go down, it tells you that what's going down between year 2.5 and year 4 is actually largely other events, not related to their follicular lymphoma. I think it tells us that, you know, maybe 1 year is a good time point to say this is likely to be a multi-year remission, but 2 years is even a better time point to say that. So unfortunately, unlike large cell lymphoma, we don't have these early indicators that people are going to do well, but there are these later indicators that I think if you hit that time point, patients will likely do very well for a while. The counter to that is, you know, what do I do if someone has a partial response at 3 months? I don't think that a partial response at 3 months in follicular lymphoma, I don't think a third of those are going to go on to a CR like we do with large cells. So I'm much more worried about that patient with follicular lymphoma than I am necessarily with a partial response in large cell lymphoma. I think there are a few false positives on those PET scans.
Gotcha. So last topic, and I want to be maybe a little bit provocative here, you know, a lot of people are talking about bispecifics are going to happen in the community of follicular lymphoma. And then, you know, if they get through that third line bispecific, then, you know, that's a sweet spot for CAR T. But what does that do to the T cells? What is your prediction about, are we going to be able to manufacture? Are the T cells going to be fit, you know, coming off of a bispecific? Is it going to matter if they're coming right off the bispecific or if they've been put back on the shelf and then relapse? Are we going to be recycling bispecifics?
Yeah, these are great questions and ones without answers.
Now you can predict the future.
I think it's just like the question of bendamustine with follicular lymphoma. You know, many of these patients saw bendamustine years before we collected their T cells. And so the impact of that bendamustine didn't have a negative effect on the quality of the T cells. And I think this, if it turns out that exposure to bispecific leads to exhausted T cells and an exhausted T cell phenotype that makes it harder to manufacture effective CAR T cells, a washout period and time from those bispecifics are going to be important in determining whether that's going to be a factor for a specific patient. So many of these patients, you know, thankfully, because the duration of response from bispecifics is so long, many of these patients are going to have an adequate washout period before they're going to need CAR T cells. It does look like on those bispecific studies that if patients get, you know, the 6 months of mosunetuzumab and then you take them off therapy and then they relapse, you can put them back on mosunetuzumab and they can respond as well. I think people are still using that as fixed duration dosing when they give a second course. And I think depending on the second remission, you would decide then when they relapse, if it got shorter, you probably wouldn't dip back into bispecifics, and maybe that's a time for CAR T cells. Whereas if they have an as long or longer remission, you might keep going back to your bispecific. So I think a lot of it's going to come to what the individual patient's responses are each time. The most important thing is, you know, not have a patient be exposed to a bispecific 3 weeks before you collect their CAR T cells, but give them some time off.
Very good. Well, there you have it, folks. Thank you for joining us today. This was a, you know, a very educational blow through here of relapsed refractory follicular lymphoma and the highlighting of cellular therapy and bispecifics and what is, you know, like many of our non-Hodgkin's lymphomas right now, just a bit of chaos with a lot of strategy. So with that, I want to thank you for joining us today and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.